It's time for another episode of the Infinite Loopback Podcast, an Apple-themed technology podcast with your hosts, Brian Baggett, Jim Graham, Brad Tarver, and Jason Young. Hey guys, how's it going this week, man?
Wondermous.
Been a busy week with work. It's cold. I'm in St. Louis. It's really cold.
We're in Atlanta, and it's been in like the 20s for the last couple days, so it's been a little bit frosty here as well.
Yeah, same here. I guess seasonally cold just because it is almost February, but then again, it is Mississippi, and you really expect it to be 70 almost year-round.
Well, at least in the winter months. So that's the winter temperature, because here it was like 60s and 70s last week, and my wife and I had planned on going to Topgolf yesterday for her birthday. And we're not able to do it because it was suddenly 30 degrees. That was a little bit weird.
You say that. We went to Topgolf on Friday night with my sister who recently moved to Dallas. And it was in the 40s outside, but they got those massive heaters like up above you. And we were fine. We really enjoyed it. I was surprised.
We did it in Nashville after Christmas, and they had the same thing. They had the big heaters, and it was fine. But I don't know. We were just a little worried because it was legit under 30 degrees. So it was kind of like, are we going to need gloves when we're out there holding the... Just hard to know. So didn't want to get there, spend money, and then be up the creek.
Yeah, it's been pretty cold in St. Louis this week. It was like 12 when I landed Monday, or when I got to... go to work Monday morning, and right now we're actually under a winter weather advisory right now that they emailed us about it at work today. It started at 6 and it goes through tomorrow. We're gonna have some rain and some light snow and maybe some ice.
Hopefully for you, you won't be stuck in St. Louis for the weekend, so that would be kind of annoying.
Yeah, that would be kind of annoying for sure.
Well, the thing about St. Louis, you know, and I guess it's any northern city, is northern to us anyway, is, you know, there'll be 6 feet of dirty snow on the side of the road, on both sides of the road, everywhere you go.
Yep. And there's like ice. January, I mean, not April. Ice, there's salt everywhere.
It's disgusting. Right, just now, that gray, so those gray, ruined, those gray
ruined your nice
of
Nikes.
Snow.
You can't even wear your nice shoes when you're in that sludge. That's what I always think of when I see that. But if you get stuck in St. Louis, you can enjoy your square pizza or your vertically sliced bagels and whatever else they do in St. Louis that's unique to St. Louis. So... subpar barbecue. I don't know.
Very subpar barbecue. The pizza, I don't know if it's square, but they use Prevail cheese. That's the big thing. That's the St. Louis pizza.
Ah, cheese. I thought it was like a square pizza or something. Maybe I was thinking of Michigan.
Yeah, it's Prevail cheese they put on the pizza here.
What the hell is Prevail cheese?
It's like half Swiss, half American.
What?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. It's not awful, but that's, it's not weird. Mozzarella either, so...
You go to take a bite, and instead of stretching, it just snaps in your face.
Let's see. So what do we have happening in the news this past week? I guess there was a lot of talk about Apple dropping plans for encrypting backups after the FBI complained, which kind of seems like a weird thing. I know over at Daring Fireball, John has broken down a lot of this.
He's worked up.
Well, first, I noticed on Twitter he had said something like, courage, or something like that, you know, taking a shot, but... it just really seems weird that Apple would drop plans to do something like that. They had fully encrypted backups back in the day when you had that secret key. Remember having to make the secret key that you had to put in a secret location when you did, when you did your whole drive encryption, you used to have the secret key. Do you guys remember that? Did you ever do whole disk encryption back in the day, back in like the, I don't know, Snow Leopard days, those types of things?
Yeah.
Yeah, where you had to have the disk.
Yeah, before
key.
It was called
file. They had something like that, apparently, that was analogous to... Was that ever like that in iCloud, or was it not? It may have just been for the whole disk encryption. But it was one of those things where it's like, you better write this down, because if you lose it, you're screwed. So I guess the thing is, they get more people who are worried about losing their data or being locked out of their data forever than being subpoenaed. Because, I don't know, I have my own thoughts on this. What do you guys think about that? Is it something that... Are you shocked and appalled that Apple doesn't do this? Would it make a difference to you, or would the risk of getting locked out of your data be so scary that you wouldn't want to deal with it?
Well, on the ideas of freedom, you know, I feel like they need to be consistent with it, and they're talking about privacy here and privacy there, and we're advocates for that. And I feel like whole disk encryption and any sort of thing that maintains a privacy from your government or any other, you know, nefarious party is a good thing. And I mean, if you don't want to use it because you don't think you can keep up with that key or with that password, so be it. You know, I'm not one that's involved in weird necessarily things, so I'm not worried about getting stopped at the border and be like, well, let's, you know, we're going to look at your phone or you can't open it because it's encrypted.
I might like some weird stuff, but it's all legal stuff.
At the same time, I still feel like that. You know what I mean? I just feel like I feel like it needs to be there. I'm not, you know, Edward Snowden being stopped between international borders or something where that would become a question.
Exactly.
But I do feel
and
like
I think
it needs
that's
to be
what
an option.
I've heard, you know, references to people saying is it should be an option. Like when you back up to your Mac, it's an option. It's not by default, but you can set a key or password or whatever. And back up, you know, locally encrypted. And so I it should be an option. And I agree with the way Apple's doing it because there are a lot of people that they wouldn't be able to get to their stuff. And they'll be like, no, help me out here, Apple. And I think they would end up getting as much flack from that direction as they will from, you know, like the very few times when the FBI needs to get to something versus, you know, every time somebody's mom loses their stuff and they need to, you know, restore their phone. That happens a lot more than, you know, somebody shooting up a military base. I mean, maybe not as much as it used to be, but still, it, you know, it's like, it, I don't know. I guess I hadn't thought about it not being non-encrypted. But, you know, that makes sense.
Rene Ritchie talked about earlier in the week, there needs to be sort of a sign-up process in that there needs to be like a double opt-in sort of questioning as it steps through the wizard or through the screens that go forward to turning on end-to-end encrypted backups. And I think that's a pretty good idea. You know, I think that's one reason why they have, you know, as far as losing your key, that's why they have two-factor authentication across, you know, all of your devices, you know. So if you don't have your, you know, you can get a two-factor prompt on your phone or your laptop or whatever. It's not just tied to one device or tied to, you know, your phone number, which we all know is problematic. It's sort of like, you know, using Authy instead of your phone number or...
Yeah, I mean, I will, you know, with the caveat there. You know, I have a bunch of devices, but most people only have their phone. Like, you know, some people have an iPad, some people have a Mac, but, you know, the iPhone, everybody, you know, in this case, what we're really talking about is backing up an iPhone. It has nothing to do with anything else, in my opinion. But most people only have the phone. And so, you know, if that's the only device you have, you know, then it could be problematic if you get yourself locked out, you know, and you don't know how to get back into it.
I think of the situation that most of us have with iCloud, if you do have multiple devices, where if you attempt to sign in from a new device, you get prompted to authenticate on your Mac and your watch and your iPad. Having a situation like that, where if something was fully end-to-end encrypted, but you still had control of another device to be able to authorize it, to unlock it, to get at that data, I think that would be an acceptable... I don't want to say configuration, but there has to be some sort of trade-off of where you're able to access this data if you have multiple devices. It seemed like for the longest time, whenever the FBI would go at it with Apple, it was always over a data on a phone from someone who is dead. I think the last time this happened, the person was still alive when it happened that they've been fighting with. And I thought, okay, well, if the person's dead, they're using that as, well, see, we can't get to the data, instead of, well, you can compel them to give you the data. That's the thing that I don't really understand, is that we've had whole drive encryption for a long time. And there have been cases that I've read, and I'll have to put links in the show notes, where you have people who have things that they know are illegal on their hard drive that are fully encrypted. And the government says, decrypt your hard drive. And they're like, I'm going to take the fifth. I'm not going to do it because I'm not going to help you incriminate me. And then they just sit and rot in jail for not complying with a court order. So, like, just because they can't get to your data doesn't mean that there's not ramifications for the things that you do. So, I don't know. I'm kind of leery of the government having that sort of ability, because for most people, it seems like your phone is almost like an extension of your mind. You know, we've all had laptops for decades, but we didn't always put anything into a computer. Your phone is very sticky. It's with you all the time, and you're much more likely to have things in there that would probably be damaging to your life if they got out, I guess, for most
people. It knows everywhere you go. It knows everyone you talk to. I mean, think about all the things that your phone knows. What I don't get is, if Apple has made the backups available to somebody like the FBI, what does the phone have on it that they can't get to? I mean, do they want like the, is it what they did in the 15 minutes before they started shooting that might not have backed up yet? I mean, is that what they're looking for when they're trying to get into the phones versus getting into the cloud backups?
That's always possible. I mean, your backups don't really happen until you get on Wi-Fi. So if you're not on Wi-Fi, if you turn Wi-Fi off and leave iCloud on, your backups will have very outdated data pretty soon. Alternately, you don't have to use iCloud backup at all. Like if you don't have iCloud, if you're doing backups to iTunes, you can encrypt those. And if something happens to those, then good luck. You'll never get that data back. Which is also kind of a trade-off. Like, you know, if you want to do it manually, you can still do this and it's still fully encrypted. So a nefarious actor could do something like that and completely keep their data out of iCloud if they really wanted to. But I know health data and some of the other things that they have to be encrypted. So like when you go and you back up to iCloud, your health data is one of those things where all of your workouts and heartbeat and all that other stuff that's covered by HIPAA, at least in the U.S., that comes back to your device. So like every time you upgrade a phone, now originally it didn't. If you remember in the early days of the Apple Watch, you had to be really careful or you would lose all of your workout data if you wanted to keep it, like me. But, you know, as time goes on, they've done that. And some of that stuff is encrypted, but some of it's not. And some of the stuff that is encrypted, like iMessage, they actually still have, you know, you have a key and they have a key. So somebody breaking in isn't necessarily going to be able to get it. And unless they were able to get Apple's key, that would be a bad thing. But in most cases, that stuff's going to be secure enough, but with a subpoena, it could be given. So some of the stuff is and some of the stuff isn't. But to your point, if you're doing something nefarious, why even back up anything at all? Like, wouldn't you take steps to make sure that wasn't there? I mean, this is just one of those things where it would be easy to cover your tracks and make it a moot point if you were intent on not doing something like that. If you didn't want to have that there, I think you could.
Or in comes the alternate type of encrypting where you put your encrypted, you know, image in the middle of the drive and you can claim plausible deniability, et cetera, because that data can't be seen. You know,
like TrueCrypt.
You don't really know it's there unless you know it's
burner
there.
Burner phone. Come on, people. Burner phone. Just, you
know. Hey, like,
if you're going to go shoot up a bunch of people, get you a little flip phone and use that for a couple of weeks before you do it. You know, I mean.
It's a lot harder to do now. I guess prepaid, I guess you could. Do you still have to show an ID to get prepaid? I don't know. I'm pretty sure that things are a lot more stringent than they used to be, but I don't know. Do you guys have any more you want to say on that?
It's not going away, right?
No, it's...
This is not going away.
I hope Apple wins.
I mean, and it's going to keep being a back and forth. But I hope at least Apple stands strong with the we're not making backdoors, period. Either don't encrypt it, or if you encrypt it, there are no backdoors. Because if you encrypt it and you put in a backdoor, you've complicated it, and you might as well not have encrypted it in the first place.
That is true. Once the key is out there, you can't get it back, and then you have potentially billions of people who are at risk. And of course, we didn't put this in the list of things to talk about, but of course, in the news again this week was the fact that Jeff Bezos had his phone hacked a year ago. It's looking like it has been alleged that the Saudi kingdom was behind that through a nefarious WhatsApp message that when he opened it, I guess it started transferring, you know, gigabytes and gigabytes of data off his phone, including things that were very embarrassing that he didn't want getting out. So
how awesome is that Jeff Bezos is like WhatsApp friends with like the crown prince of Saudi Arabia? It's like, you know, what's that little group me chat about, you know, like
that blew my mind.
I bought my third yacht today.
I'm beginning to think that if you're a CEO, you're going to have to be like a mob boss, where the only people who can contact you are like your trusted lieutenants, and then maybe they can talk to other people, but you only talk to a couple of people. You know what I mean? Like, it's one of those things where I found that very odd too. You can't just be a, jet setting billionaire who's first of all, using WhatsApp. You know, doesn't Amazon make Chime? Why isn't anyone using Chime?
I'm not trying to get political here, but I've heard that Trump is very good at basically asking for what he wants done without saying it in the way it's incriminating, like very mob boss-ish, however you want to say it. But I've heard several different interviews where they talk about, you know, the way he operates. He knows, like, you know, one of the things he's maybe actually good at, you know, is you know, working within the boundaries of the law, where he knows what he can say and what he can't say. And, you know, it's kind of interesting that, you know, that we'll see how the trial goes this week, I guess.
Yeah, that's going to be a big one. Sounds like he is a habitual line stepper, as the late Charlie Murphy would have said. Step right up to the line. Let's see. So what else is on the list of things to talk about? A lot about security this week. So speaking of encryption, we had been privately talking about possibly getting a YubiKey. I know I've something I've considered just for grins and giggles. I mean, I figure it'll make me more secure, but it was reported this week that academic researchers are finding that 5 of the U.S. telcos are vulnerable to SIM swapping attacks, not just social engineering of calling and impersonating someone and getting their SIM swapped, but actually going in, having vulnerabilities in the systems and doing the SIM swaps themselves, which if you're using SMS as your two-factor auth, that's a big problem. Like, I always worried about the social engineering aspect of it. And again, we're nobodies. It's not like it's likely to happen to us, but it could. And I'm sure everyone who's had it happen didn't think, oh, this is, you know, I'm not worth it. This isn't going to happen, but there you go. So it looks like that telco employees are installing remote desktop malware, either unknowingly or being paid off to do it. And that was just sort of an eye-opener. That, to me, is really making me consider getting a YubiKey for doing two-factor of all of my accounts. I'm considering going through 1Password and finding all of the accounts for things that I don't use anymore and just terminating them, shutting them down completely. I don't use the same password anywhere. I mean, every one of my hundreds of passwords are all unique. But even with two-factor, that whole SMS as a whole, I mean, I use 1Password for most of my two-factor auth. And if a company has, like Microsoft or 365, where they have an authenticator app, I'll use the authenticator app. I don't mind. It'll pop to my watch. It's fine. But I really want to get away from SMS, and certain companies that I use, just everything is still SMS only, and it's very disheartening. What do you guys think about that? Are you considering doing something like a YubiKey? Have you taken a look at it? Have you seen kind of how neat they are? I believe they use NFC in some cases now as well.
I looked at the YubiKey 1 or 2 years ago, and I just never bit down. I should have done it, and you know. And some of the extended uses of it are really cool, like integrating it into SSH logins, which would be great for somebody like you or me who
I've been doing that lately too on a daily basis. Don't exclude me over here just because I'm a database guy. I run PuTTY every day.
Good for you, Jim. Sorry, Jim.
I got to check my logs on the Unix box.
I like that. No, I think you're right on that. And the fact that, if I'm not mistaken, they use NFC now, so you're not having to just... I have a bad taste in my mouth because for 20 years, or close to 20 years, I had to use the RSA Secure ID so much. I mean, across multiple employers for years and years and years. It's like, okay, I got to go log into my VPN. Where is my stupid... I'm so old that I remember when it was a thick credit card size device, and that kind of sucked. And then later on, you know, maybe 15 years ago, you got the little tiny keychain dongle that had a chip. But then that thing would die periodically, as things do. You know, the battery would wear out, and you'd have to send in for another one.
I have a really crazy collection of those from all my years consulting.
I bet you do.
One or two places will ask for them back, but most of the times they don't. And yeah, I've got like a great graveyard of VPN keys. And at least the last 2 or 3 clients, though, it's all... phone based. So like I'm currently, my client is like uses Ping ID on the phone. So
at least that's better. I mean, I even found when I was cleaning out my desk last week that I'm recording this in front of, and I found what I thought was a calculator. It wasn't a calculator. It was one of the business units for the company that I used to work for, had a separate VPN system with some sort of off brand, authentication thing that looked like a calculator. But my God, I had such a bad it was always so inconvenient. Like if you're out on the road and you needed to do something, oh crap, I left my secure ID at home. I can't get into the VPN. Or so, and it would be one more thing to keep with me if I needed to. Now I understand the new ones for the YubiKey. Actually, you can plug into the Lightning port if you have an iPhone, has NFC. They look pretty neat based on what I had seen. So maybe I could be convinced to do that. And there's always the trade-off of convenience versus... What's that, Jim?
What's one of those run? Like, I mean, if somebody was looking at one of those, what are you talking to get into YubiKey? Is there, are there different levels, or is it just like this is the one, or...
Yeah, they have several generations, but the most like recent generation is NFC and I think Lightning or USB, depending on the device you want to be able to plug into. So you can just touch your phone to it, or you know, plug it into the USB slot on a computer or something like that to be able to authenticate. This is a space Apple really needs to get into, because you already have biometric authentication for your phone. You already have biometric authentication for your Macs, the newer Macs. Touch ID, Face ID, these are all things that, you know, this could be something that if, you know, they got into this. Like, I don't see a need for it for my phone, but now that we have the sign-in with Apple thing for a lot of these services, which I think I used with Bird or Lime or one of those when I was doing scooters for the first time in San Diego a couple months ago. It was the first time I did the sign-in with Apple option of like, cool, I can do this. Maybe that'll be something that they'll Sherlock at some point. So maybe I won't have to do that.
I thought they were going to get the little Finder dongle things. You know, everybody's been talking about Apple was going to do that, but they haven't actually released them yet.
Well, it's funny you should mention that, because just this week, it appears that Tile, makers of the Tile trackers, and Sonos are pleading with the Congress to go ahead to regulate Apple, Amazon, Facebook, and Google. Because, well, Sonos has a claim that Google reverse engineered...
Bail us out for our poor business models.
Well, Sonos has a weird business model where they're... So much came out about Sonos for the last couple of weeks. So, but while we weren't recording, I guess for certain devices, if you put those into recycle mode, Sonos will brick the device. And once you place it into recycle mode, you have 2 weeks, I think it is, 2 weeks, 21 days, something like that. And then that thing becomes bricked. Like, it literally will not work. And if you even accidentally do it, they can't undo it. They won't undo it. So you put your device, your perfectly working device, in this death spiral that you can't get it out of. And apparently, there was a lot of people on Twitter I noticed this week who have owned Sonos devices since like the early 2000s, like 2005, 2006. Some of this stuff was apparently still in the sales channel. It's been end of life, and apparently this stuff's going to no longer get upgrades. It's no longer going to work. They're encouraging people to go and upgrade to newer hardware. Which that's kind of distressing for a speaker. But the big news that we were talking about with Sonos is that apparently they had tried to work with Google at some point. They were going to partner with Google, and they discovered that Google allegedly reverse engineered their proprietary software to be able to for their speaker tech and implemented it themselves. That's what Sonos is alleging that Google has done. So they're suing Google. They're very upset about that. And, of course, Tile is upset because it's rumored. I mean, we haven't even seen it. It hasn't even come out. But Tile is certain that Apple is going to release a tracking device, as was rumored. And now they're wanting Congress to protect it. So in the case of Sonos, I can kind of see it, because if they've done something wrong, that's a pretty bad thing to do. But the courts, you know, there's a legal system. You can go through and get that adjudicated. But when it comes to Tile, I don't see where Congress should get involved to prevent you from being Sherlocked. If you have something that is covered by a patent, that's one thing, I guess. But releasing something with similar functionality, I mean, there's no way that's ever going to fly. I mean, what do you guys think about that?
Sonos has got such a weird business model. I mean, they were the smart speaker before it really existed, sort of. You know, I looked into it super detailed a couple of years ago and just decided I didn't want to get on proprietary software that I had to use to play stuff through my speaker. You know, I just wanted to use Bluetooth or AirPlay or whatever. And so that's why I kind of, you know, just steered away from it. I mean, I know they sound great. I've heard them before. You know, and I have no doubt that Google probably is doing something with some of their tech, or sort of, you know, but good luck proven it. I, you know, these things, usually drag on, and it seems like it costs the companies more money to actually do it than what they ever get out of it. But at some point, I think a lot of companies, that's the only business model they got left, you know, is to try to protect their IP.
I mean, I see how you can get a pretty broad patent and, you know, do something like, well, our keychain lets you find stuff and no one else can make a keychain that finds stuff or that is locatable. And maybe that's what Tile is going to lean on as far as, you know, trying to keep someone else from replicating their product. But, I mean, who's to say that Apple, you know, did anything except to create their own chip, which they have done already in other products, create their own chip and their own technology and own protocols based on Bluetooth or whatever, because since Bluetooth is open, you know, to create their own tile-like device to basically replicate the functionality, but has none of the...
I don't think you can legislate against real competition. Core tech in it. That's the thing that's such. A little sketchy. So like I say with Sonos, if Google did what Sonos alleges they did, then there's already methods to deal with that, right? That's something you're not allowed to take a product, reverse engineer it, build a competitor, and then be on your merry way. I mean, it happens. It still happens. But at least that's something that's kind of provable. And Google would be better off probably settling out of court or something rather than, actually taking this to all the way to the Supreme Court or whatever. And I did hear that I think Microsoft actually ended up patenting a lot of the stuff that Sonos ended up doing with the smart speaker space back in the 90s. So that should be a very interesting, if it makes it this far and they have to dig through the prior art and those sorts of things. But the Tile thing is the most shocking thing to me because they haven't actually, released a product. They're wanting regulation based off, of something that may or may not exist. Now, granted,
just a rumored Macs, product,
iPhones, right. iPads, of being able to find things through Find My iPhone or Find My, as they're just calling it now, I think that's it's a useful thing. Clearly, they're not doing things the same way that Tile's doing because Apple's making a distributed mesh network, based off last location. That's way beyond anything that Tile's able to do. Tile can find your keys in your house, but I mean, Tile won't let me know the last place my phone was seen was the airport if I get on a plane and fly somewhere. So,
well, it will. I mean, you can leave your phone somewhere and get on the internet and use the log into the Tile's website and find your phone
But if they're doing it on Bluetooth, it was the last known location, right?
But correct. Your phone and your phone and your keys would have had to have been within, 30 yards of each other at the same time. So you wouldn't have been able to say, leave your phone in the car, carry your keys under the bar with you, and the phone is, say, 250 yards away, and then it'd be able to, the last known location would have been, say, that parking lot, not in the bar, but you left your keys in the bar.
But I think with Apple's way of doing it,
and then you're out there searching
if everyone opts into
this, for your keys.
Let's say I leave my phone at the airport. If it were a Tile-like device, it would only know the last place that it checked in. But with the Find My stuff that they're doing now, if somebody picked up my phone and took it, gotten an Uber and drove like 20 miles away to a place where there's a lot of Macs and iPhones, my phone is going to start talking to those other devices and report its new location back, even if they've turned off cellular, right? That's something
that's
beyond
badass.
Yeah, that is actually pretty neat. So I don't know. It seems radically different enough to me that complaining to Congress, whether or not they should be regulated is a great discussion to have, but not because, oh my God, they may compete with me. Someday, maybe. I don't know. It seems sort of tenuous to me. It seems sort of build a better product. Compete.
Well, that whole thing right there is just the whole Apple product, the whole Apple scheme of, Find My and being able to ping off of other devices. I mean, that's game-changing. I mean, that's next-worldly, next-generation type, Find My type device instead of just putting
every
plastic
couple of weeks,
fob on your keychain.
My wife will go, where's my phone? and I'll yell at the HomePod, you know, find my wife's iPhone. It goes, just one moment, it's nearby. And then we stop and listen for the pinging. No having to log in like you used to do. No longer having
to... Does she not have an Apple Watch?
Okay, so she took my Series 4 that I was going to sell on eBay, and she wears it sometimes. Like, there will be days that she'll go, how do you have more steps in than me? And I was on my feet all day working. And I'm like, I went to the gym. She's like, but maybe she didn't wear it the whole day. Or maybe she only put it on before she went to work. Like, I sleep with the thing most of the time. So, but she doesn't wear it.
I think that's what Megan uses her watch for more than anything, is for finding her phone. She, once I showed her that, like, you can ping your phone with your watch thing, man, like once a week, ding, 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 ding.
I use that all the time as well. Most of the time, my wife it's like, uses I leave the daily. Phone upstairs daily. Or downstairs? And it's, and
yeah, exactly.
I run to the stairs same and listen up condo, or down. Yeah. Where is it? But no, that's, being married to me, you think she would do that stuff more, but she definitely marches to the beat of her own tech drummer. So she cannot be coerced into, like, sometimes I'll look and she's wearing it. Sometimes she's not. Well, I've tried to train her.
She
if
doesn't
you don't
need
know where it
help,
is, just
Brian.
Yell at the
she
HomePod. The HomePod will find it. Like, it's the next best thing to using your watch. It'll even tell you, like, you know, did you leave it at work?
Did she
know?
Ever catch on to the new iPad?
No, she has not. I thought the repeating payments inside of the credit card for the exact same amount over 3 months would give it away, but so far, so good.
That's hilarious.
I love that I was able to stealth upgrade her product, but I know that if she knew, she'd be like, why'd you do that? That was a waste of money. And it's like, no, your old iPad was terrible. It was dog slow. It took 10 seconds to unlock. It's terrible. But now it's just like, oh, it's like butter. And she doesn't even know it. It's great. Let's see what
that
else.
That's hilarious.
Go ahead. What were you going to say, Jim?
Just saying, that's hilarious. I love it.
It is pretty good. I'm the only person I know that has to do something nice sneakily. Like, this should have been something. It wasn't like it was an expensive iPad. It was like $300-$400 tops. Like, it was not a...
Yeah, but $300-$400 is, you know, a lot of money. Like, that's like a Valentine's gift that you just basically snuck it to her and she didn't even know.
You know, I should have told her so I could have gotten credit for doing something nice, but she loves to hang on to tech until it is nigh unusable. Like, and I understand not wanting to upgrade your phone every year. I get that. She's still rocking the 8 from like 2.5 years ago. And again, also in the show notes, they're saying that the new low cost iPhone is to enter mass production in February. So this would be the one that would be the successor to the 8 with an A13 chip and a better camera, but still in the iPhone 8 chassis with Touch ID instead of Face ID, which will be my wife's new phone. If they will hurry up and do this, it'll be great. But sometimes you just got to know when to let that tech go. You got to know that this is no longer something viable that you need to be using. It's old, it's slow. Don't be afraid to upgrade it. Know when to fold them. Know when to walk away and know when to trade it in. Know when to get a sneaky iPad. The sneaky iPad.
Count your money. No. I think I mentioned last week in our chat that I bought an iPhone SE on eBay. Well, the person never contacted me. I never heard anything back from them. I checked PayPal this week. And they'd never even accepted the payment, so I just canceled it. And so, no iPhone SE. I'll have to start bidding again. Well,
was that going to be your new burner?
I use my iPad Pro for
your
a second
nefarious
Pokemon
things.
Go account. And I don't like carrying my iPad Pro around with me all the time on, like, big event days and stuff. It's just really big. To be walking around with, and I don't want to drop it, you know, that kind of thing. So I was just trying to get like a little device that I could play that second account on. And I thought it'd be kind of neat to have an old and a little SE. But oh well, I started looking for an 8, and they were a little too much, and then looked at the 7s, and when I saw I could get an SE for like $100, I was just like, let's play around with it.
So my extravagance is I've wanted to, and I haven't done this, of course, but I would love to have a phone that just stays plugged into my car and sits in the console. That's just one that I don't have to plug my phone into. Like, seriously, out of reach, I can't get to it. Just always in there for navigation and other stuff. But Jim is getting a second Pokemon phone. Baller. It would be my literal car phone.
It would be Brian's
Jim's
literal
over here
car
getting
phone.
Pokeballs.
I wasn't going to activate it. I was just going to tether it.
So I guess you could go to one of those things and, like, actually, what do you call that when you fight another player? Like, you could just duel yourself.
Oh, I do that. I do fight against myself. You get a prize when you do it, no matter if you win or lose. So I do it at least once a day just to get the prize between the two accounts.
So could you get an iPod Touch, a recent generation iPod Touch, and just tether to your phone and then just do it that way? Would that not work?
That would work, but I don't think they don't have the GPS in them.
That'd be more than $100.
They don't have like the right. That's why I don't want to get a non-cellular iPad, because to have the GPS, you have to have the cellular chip.
Ah, that makes sense. Ah, okay.
Yeah. And because it's a, you know, it's a geolocation game, so.
So the watch, though, no, wait a minute. Am I remembering this right? So in the days before, all right, there has to be a loophole here. So in the days before the watch had its own GPS, it would get its GPS data tethered to the phone. This is something that I need to investigate because I'm curious about this. I don't think you're wrong. I think you're probably right, because in all the times that I played with doing using like a Waze, like tablet back in the days before CarPlay supported Waze, I think I ran into this. But I thought tethering actually would make use of the phone's GPS. I think that was one of the things they shared between the two, but it was so laggy that for directions it wasn't very good. But I don't know about Pokemon though. I'm gonna look into that. That would be that's an interesting thought experiment, because you probably could get a low cost.
They're even still more, you know, I'd rather just have a, you know, use 7 or 8 versus a touch, I think. What's crazy is the iPad Mini is one of the most expensive iPads you can get. Like, a mini costs more than like a standard iPod on resale. It's really odd. The minis are there's like a premium on them for some reason. Maybe they just don't make as many or something.
There's always, you add $125 to the cost of an iPad if you get cellular, I think is the rule. It's at least 100. It's at least 100 more.
Yeah,
usually,
but I'm just saying, just the iPad, like looking into an iPad Mini, you know, trying to get a used Mini is, you know, you might as well just get a full-size iPad, because they're actually cheaper used. The Minis just, you know, don't come around.
Yeah, it's few and far between the folks that end up liking the cellular. I'm a big fan of the cellular. I've owned multiple cellulars. I think it's just about all I buy when I buy for myself is the cellular. And wouldn't you know it, I don't even travel as much as I used to, so I could probably get away with not paying that fee to Verizon every month. But damn, it's convenient to have when you absolutely need it, though.
Oh, my cellular iPad Pro is my favorite.
It sure
Apple
is.
Device.
I love being able to pull out my Mini and just use it wherever.
That's why I put that account on there, and I love bringing it with me. I don't want to damage it. I love the keyboard on it. I like it when I use it I have a different case that when I do go walking around with it, I put it in there so I don't have because the keyboard is great on the iPad Pro, like the Apple one. But it's not the best case, because it's really just kind of magneted in there. It's not really holding itself in, you know, it at all. I love my iPad Pro. It's one of the reasons why I've decided to switch back. You know, we talked about it in the last podcast, switch to my older Mac. And then if they do come out with new Pros, iPad Pros, I might go ahead and get a new one of those instead of getting a new Mac.
Yeah, not a bad thing to do, I don't think. Let's see what else. I built a VPN server at home, so that's something. I don't know if I'd mentioned this on the podcast before, but I know in Telegram that I've talked to you guys about it. I've been using Parallels Access for a while, several years now. I guess Jim was doing it too for the longest time. And over the years, I used to use things like LogMeIn. Hamachi, I guess, was one of those, and they decided they didn't want to be in the home market anymore, and they raised their rates to some, you know, astronomical fee if you wanted to use it. And I had used various things over the years, and I used to run a VPN server on my Mac back when Mac server was still a thing, and they actually had that in there. And then they turned that off, I guess, a couple years back. So I had been using Parallels Access, you know, pay them the yearly fee. I think it was like 50 or 60 bucks or whatever it was. And you got Parallels Desktop, so you could go and do your virtual machines if you wanted to do that. And you got access to Parallels Access, which was great. When I upgraded to Catalina, that thing just fell apart. So no longer, I could remote into my machines, but I couldn't do things like, I couldn't use the pointer, I couldn't use the keyboard, so it was all but worthless. And I went back and forth with support, and they had me do uninstalls and reinstalls, and it was just a big pain. So I thought, you know what? What I'll do is I'll put it at least on my Windows 10 machine, right? I'll put Parallels Access on there. I'm not using any remote for that, but that'll be fine. And I'll be damned if that thing didn't work either. So it's like, you know, it's one thing not to support an operating system that's been out a couple months. It's quite another to not support something very well that's been out for years at this point. So I finally just said, screw it. And I went and got a Raspberry Pi 4, the Canna kit off of Amazon that had everything in it. And boy, howdy, is that thing nice. Like, this is probably the best VPN that I've used in a long time. I went with StrongSwan, and man, it's IKEv2. It has been the best VPN solution that I have ever had. Like, this thing has worked remarkably well. Love having the gigabit Ethernet in it. So it's one of the few things that I have that's not wireless. Not that I'm really going to need the full throughput of gig up and down, because I won't be able to get it wherever I am, but it's nice to have, and it's been working great. So Brad had reminded me that screen sharing was still a thing you could do on the Mac. So it has its own VNC server. So I use Screens for, you know, I'll VPN back into my home server, use Screens to connect. On the Windows side, I'm using just remote desktop, and everything is great. So I'm really digging this. I can't believe it took me this long to go and build a VPN again. I guess you're using your USG, right, Brad, at home for your VPN?
I am right now. I've been meaning to do some experiments with just seeing what the Pi 4 can do as far as encrypted throughput. So I actually have two Pi 4s that I need to put together and create, you know, a pretend internet and see, you know, connect them to each other via gigabit. So I have true gig on each side and then see how much throughput I can actually get on it. You know, putting a laptop on each side or, you know, some sort of virtual to virtual through both the Pis, just so that I can actually see, you know, do I get 300 megabit encrypted or more or less, just to see how much that processor can actually do, since the new Pi 4 processor is supposed to be.
I haven't really tested it. I mean, honestly, I'm not doing large file transfers or anything like that. Most of the time, I just need consistent enough to do a couple of desktops and be able to sort of traverse my network, and nothing terribly that's going to be throughput intensive, I guess. So, you know, maybe I'm not the best judge of that, but I was shocked at how simple it was. I found a great guide online about setting up the firewall rules and installing the software. Only had to make a couple of minor corrections to it. And I really wish I had done this a long time ago. One of the things that's nice about doing this, too, is I love taking an image using PyBaker on the Mac. And once I've configured the base OS the way that I like it, I can just take a full backup of that image. And then once I've configured the VPN software, I take a full backup of that. So if at any point I need to revert to a point-in-time copy where it's something is working. The other thing that I did, of course, was went out and get an actual real certificate from an actual certificate authority. So I didn't have to do any of the self-signed stuff. I could actually use a real cert. So at least I'm not, you know, worried about man-in-the-middle type of attack. So, yeah, it's been pretty cool. I also got around to installing Homebridge again, which I haven't done in quite a while, but I put that on my Pi hole, which is a weird phrase to say, and a lot less useful than I had hoped. I had wanted to put my security system on it, but the plugins didn't seem to quite work, and not really a shock because they were a little bit outdated at this point. I'm sure a lot of these vendors will update it so that this, you know, it's always, you're always playing a game of catch-up with undocumented changes to APIs and whatnot, and a lot of times these are webhooks that people write to be able to emulate it. It's not even an official API, so, but I will say that the process was a lot easier to get going.
So question. So now I know you're kind of using it to go back into your home network and do stuff. But if you just stayed connected to that, does it let you browse the internet using your Pi hole as an ad blocker from anywhere? So you're actually using your Pi hole at home, like you could set up an iPad to just be connected to that VPN all the time and go through your house. Oh, man, that's definitely something I got to look into, because I use ExpressVPN when I need VPNs for stuff, you know, but to be able to use, like, That's the one thing I miss when I am traveling is, man, you get used to that pie hole. And like, because I keep ad blockers turned off on all my browsers on my Mac because I, you know, I don't need them at home. And then I get out and about or whatever, and I start browsing. I'm like, what is all this crap? Why is it like this? And I'm like, oh, this is how the other half lives that sees, you know. I mean, because the pie hole works better than any, like, in-browser ad blocker as far as I'm concerned. So that is pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, since I have separate Raspberry Pis that are handling these functions at home, I can just, in the configuration for the VPN, when they're assigning DNS servers, I can just say, point the DNS server to the pie hole and you're good to go. And it's cheaper, of course, because you're not paying anything than setting it up in something like AWS and then pointing your phones to use one that you would host in AWS, which would probably run you $9 or $10 a month. Probably. I mean, based off running a constant EC2 image. Now, maybe you can do it serverless or something. I don't know. I really haven't looked into it. But to be able to use the same one that I use at home from remote is, I mean, it's just, it's perfect. Like that is also a thing that I have. Also found someone this week who wrote a Siri shortcut to be able to enable and disable the ad blocking on the pie hole. And somebody asked, why would you do that? And, you know, perfect use case. And the person cited
nice.
This. My wife doesn't understand sometimes with, she wants to go to a website and it's not working. So I don't know if you guys have run into this, but like if you don't unblock it, like let's say you're using Twitter and somebody posts a link and you click on the link. Well, it's not really a link. It's a link to the Twitter analytics that then redirects you to the actual link so that Twitter can see that you clicked on the link. Well, that's blocked by default. There have been times when I'm laying in bed and I'm browsing Twitter, I would have to turn off Wi-Fi to go to cellular so I could open the link and then turn Wi-Fi back on so it would then block, you know, subsequent ads. So I see the utility of being able to shut it on and off. I'm the only one that does that. My wife does not use the pie hole. None of her devices are configured to use it just because this is broken. I can't use this. You go to Google and you go Google Shopping or whatever, where you look for a product and you see like in the search results, here it is. If you go and touch on any one of those redirects are blocked by default. At least they are for me. So having to go through and selectively, you know, undo those things is just sort of a pain. So it's just nice to be able to block and unblock at my leisure.
Mine will go to a blocked, you know, Twitter page. I go back and then click it a second time and it goes on through.
Yes, I've had that happen as well too. So it just depends on, I don't know why it's like that. Maybe they do a weird redirect on fail or something like that. If you get I really don't know. But yes, it's great, but it also is very good at what it does. And you have to be patient about the things that it stops. But when you go to browse a news site without the pie hole, it is garbage central of all the pop-ups. And there's a thing that I use on iOS every once in a while if I'm out and about. Called Punish. I don't know if you guys have seen this. It's an ad blocker.
Yeah.
And it blocks cool. JavaScript. Oh, it's so, like, you go to like a Wall Street Journal or something, like, I'm just picking on them by default. It could be any paper. And you get the thing at the bottom and the thing at the top and the thing on the side. You hit Punish and it removes all the JavaScript. So you're just left with like the actual thing.
I have one called Unobstruct that does that.
That might be the one I've used both, but I think I have Unobstruct now.
Yes, Unobstruct does the same thing as well. Unobstruct, I have like five of these things, and I will selectively turn them on and off. I think that's, yeah. I think Unobstruct is the one that I use. Punish I will also sometimes use, but I think Unobstruct, yeah. With a little logo with a guy pushing the ads out of the way, it's way, way cool. We have other stuff we could talk about, but I don't know. This feels like a sort of a natural place to stop for the week. Do you guys have anything that you want to talk about?
No, I think I got my... Anything I wanted to talk about kind of into the conversation, you know, I had bought that phone and then now I'm not getting it. So now I'm on the market again for a Pokemon Go phone. And I don't feel bad. I mean, like I say, that's the wrong way to put it. It's yes, it's super nerdy, but when I'm out playing now, I see people walking around with three phones playing. I mean, it's just the craziest thing. And so,
what's the company? Niantic or
yeah, not Niantic. Yeah,
who makes Niantic, Pokemon Go? Like, yeah, Niantic or It's like them or Nintendo are going to come out with some sort of just dedicated Pokemon cellular device that they could sell for $500 cool, yeah. to anybody. And you don't even need like a cellular plan.
The Fire
it would be
tablets.
Like that Amazon Whisper Sync or something.
I looked into the Fire tablets, but most people say that it's really a pain to get it running on them, that it, you know, that they're not really certified to run like something like that, it, you know, from the address. Yeah, so... Because those things are dirt cheap.
Yeah.
I was going to paste a thing in the show notes from the last season of Portlandia where Fred Armisen's character wore this contraption around his neck that had like 85 iPhones and there was wires and power banks and all sorts of stuff strapped to his face. That's going to be Jim before too long. It's going to just be, you know, a bank of phones.
Jim's going to bring back the 80s Nintendo Power Glove.
Well, I think this is a good place to stop. We can just cover the other stuff next time. And unless you guys don't have anything else, I guess that should do it. Later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Please visit infiniteloopback.com for show notes and previous episodes. Follow us on Twitter. We're at infinloopback. That's at I-N-F-I-N loopback. I'm Brian B. That's at B-R-I-A-N-B. Jim is at Big Jim. That's at B-I-G-J-I-M. Jason is at J-S-N-Y-N-G. That's at J-S-N-Y-N-G. And Brad is at Meester Idle. That's at M-E-E-S-T-E-R-I-D-L-E. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.